Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Next up, we have a lot for Little Women, and I'm going to go off script here a minute because I found some more that aren't actually on the script in front of us, because a lot of these passages, like I think we've made clear, we've been working on this for several months. So the first one I want to read to you is a little bit long. It's actually the first paragraph of chapter 16, and as I read it, let me just set the stage for a minute. The Marmee is about to go off to the literal, you know, battlefield hospital where the girl's father has been injured or ill. I can't remember. I think he's just ill. I don't think he's injured, but he's potentially dying, and she's going to be his personal nurse. She's going to take care of him. So the girls are being left behind at home to carry on. So, here we go. In the cold gray dawn, the sisters lit their lamp and read their chapter with an earnestness never felt before. For now the shadow of a real trouble had come. The little books were full of help and comfort, and as they dressed, they agreed to say goodbye cheerfully and hopefully and send their mother on her anxious journey, unsaddened by tears or complaints from them. Everything seemed very strange when they went down. So dim and still outside, so full of light and bustle within. Breakfast at that early hour seemed odd, and even Hannah's familiar face looked unnatural as she flew about her kitchen with her nightcap on. The big trunk stood ready in the hall, Mother's cloak and bonnet lay on the sofa, and Mother herself sat trying to eat, but looking so pale and worn with sleeplessness and anxiety that the girls found it very hard to keep their resolution. Meg's eyes kept filling in spite of herself. Jo was obliged to hide her face in the kitchen roller more than once, and the little girls wore a grave, troubled expression, as if sorrow was a new experience to them. I think that's a really, it's a little bit longer. We might be able to small it down, but I just felt like that was a really, like, powerful moment in the story when they're being left, you know, to be the grown-ups, if you will, and to take care of things this first time that their mother and their father are both going to be gone. Now, you know, in the story, they do have a housekeeper, Hannah, who lives with them and takes care of them, but they, the four girls, are at this point in the story still very young, and, you know, this is their first real-life trouble challenge, if you will, other than just being poor, you know. So, I don't know, what did you think about that one?
I like it. I like the surreal sense to it. I like the talk about the grayness there. Yeah. That's artistically appealing. I think there's definite connections to, you know, perseverance and choosing your attitude in the face of trouble. That's
right, especially as it changes overnight. I mean, you know, as our world is doing every day. So that was one passage I thought was good. And then this one is, I'm trying to think how much of this one to read. There's a lot. This is in chapter 18, and Beth is the second to the youngest daughter, and she has contracted scarlet fever by going to take care of a even more poverty-stricken family that her mother used to go care for, and the little baby has died in her arms. One of the things I don't like about the new movie is they changed that. They don't have the baby die in her arms, and I think that's wrong, because this was in the story what she experienced. But she's contracted scarlet fever, and so this is kind of about the quarantining and the fear of this, that she's just come home from that experience. The doctor has come and said, yes, she's got the symptoms, she needs to be isolated and everything. So here's a brief part of the passage. How dark the days seemed now, how sad and lonely the house, and how heavy were the hearts of the sisters as they worked and waited while the shadow of death hovered over the once happy home. Then it goes into, like, each of the girls, there's a little couple sentences that describes each of their reactions and how they're dealing with it. But I think, so it could be a longer passage, but that's the passage that struck me. For that is just that change from their happy home, you know, to this fearful place, you know. And I felt like the imagery was, you know, dark and serious and scary and all that, but it also seemed to be very appropriate in this time period, you know, with people who are dealing with all this stuff going on, you know. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. It might be too dark. I'm not sure. It's funny to have
I think I get more imagery from the first passage that you read, and I think it would touch on a lot of similar themes.
Yeah.
So between those two, the first one was my favorite.
Okay. I think that's good. I think that's too true. Okay. Then my next one. Oh, boy. These are harder, but this is much later in the story. And Beth has never really fully recovered from the scarlet fever, and everybody's a little bit older and all that, and she's dying and she knows it, but the family has not accepted that. And so to set the stage a little bit, Joe has earned some money with her writing, and she has taken Beth off to the beach, the oceanside, to get healthy, you know. And so this is Joe thinking. It came to her then more bitterly than ever that Beth was slowly drifting away from her, and her arms instinctively tightened their hold upon the dearest treasure she possessed. I can't even read this. I get too emotional. It's just too sad. Anyway, that's not even the part I really wanted to read. It was, but that introduces that scene. There was no answer except her sister's cheek against her own, not even tears, for when most deeply moved, Joe did not cry. She was the weaker then, and Beth tried to comfort and sustain her with her arms about her and the soothing words she whispered in her ear. I've known it for a good while, dear, and now I'm used to it. It isn't hard to think of or to bear. Try to see it so, and don't be troubled about me, because it's best. Indeed it is. I think that's Beth speaking. And I thought that was a really, really powerful scene between the two of them, and it offers a lot of emotional content. I'm not sure of the visual for visual artists. I think it's a good passage for the emotional content. Does that make sense?
It does. I think if we, especially in workshops, set it up, this is taking place on a beach.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of people taking that emotion, putting it onto a beach, and a piano player can have some motion going.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like here's image of
the sounds of the
figures.
Surf. And,
right. So, I think if we give them context, I think there's lots for the visual.
Right. And I think in terms of context, the next passage I think is a really powerful one. It has to do with faith, which I think is an important part of Beth's character, and it's an important part of the overall story with mm-hmm. this book. And I think if you want to go into Louisa May Alcott's real life, I mean, it certainly was a huge part of her real life world. Okay, so I hope I can read this. I think I can. Simple, sincere people seldom speak much of their piety. It shows itself in acts rather than in words, and has more influence than homilies or protestations. Could stop right there. That sentence alone is enough, but let me just read a little further. Beth could not reason upon or explain the faith that gave her courage and patience to give up life and cheerfully wait for death. Like a confiding child, she asked no questions, but left everything to God and nature, Father and mother of us all, feeling sure that they, and they only, could teach and strengthen heart and spirit for this life and the life to come. There's a little bit more about, you know, how she feels about Joe in that moment and everything, but that's the part that I thought was really powerful in terms of what people use and lean on in their faith in times of trouble and hardship, especially, you know, facing life or death situations, which again speaks to kind of, you know, they've come out of the war at this point. The war is over, you know, they're older now, but they've gone through all of that. And you know, I just thought it was a really, really powerful passage in terms of that. So thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it occurs to me that Beth's approach to death is extremely similar to Helen Burns.
Yeah.
From Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
So whether that is the exact quote we use or not, we need to remember that for a workshop.
As soon as you said that, I'm like, and Melanie's death scene in Gone with the Wind, you know, she's completely at peace with it. She's just telling Scarlett, you know, who to take care of Ashley, take care of Beau, her son, you know. I mean, she's very pragmatic about it. She's at peace with it. There is one more that you had birds in one of the Jane Eyre ones. Birds are going to come up in another Little Women one, but this is Beth and Joe are still talking. They're still at the beach, and Beth is basically comparing all of them to birds at this point. And she says, "Dear little bird, see, Joe, how tame it is. I like peeps better than the gulls. They are not so wild and handsome, but they seem happy, confiding little things. And I used to call them my birds last summer, and Mother said they reminded her of me. Busy, Quaker-colored creatures, always near the shore, always chirping that contented little song of theirs. You are the gull, Joe, strong and wild, fond of the storm and the wind, flying far out to sea and happy all alone. Meg is the turtle dove, and Amy is the lark she likes to write about, trying to get up among the clouds, but always dropping down into its nest again. Dear little girl, she's so ambitious, but her heart is good and tender. No matter how high she flies, she will never forget home. I hope I shall see her again, but she seems so far away." I would probably end that with the dropping down into its nest again, where it's just the bird descriptions. And I thought that's a really, you know, it's kind of like she's distilled their personalities into birds, you know, which are visuals, but she's also talking about the bird's characteristics. And I thought that had a lot of visual and emotional stuff to work with for creative people. So
yeah, and I think that a lot of people are into finding some sort of animal extension of
nature
themselves.
Yeah, anthropomorphic somethings, and it also has that tie to nature, which I don't know if you've noticed, but I've noticed since we've all been, you know, sheltering in place, quarantine, lockdown, you know, social distancing, people are, you know, hearing the birds and taking pictures of the birds, and you know, they're connecting with nature more on a personal, individual, you know, communion almost kind of way. And I felt like some of these passages from Little Women really evoke that as well. So those were some. And then some of the other passages that we have for Little Women have more to do, or seem more, you know, targeted to ideas of romance and, you know, these little girls who grow up to actually have romances and everything. Well, not Beth, but spoiler, but one of the most famous quotes, I think, is Amy says, "I'm not afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship." The fuller quote is, "Lovely weather so far. I don't know how long it will last, but I'm not afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship. Come home, dear, and I'll find your bootjack. I suppose that's what you're rummaging after among my things." "Men are so helpless, Mother," said Amy with a matronly air, which delighted her husband. She, you know, in context, she's talking about the ship is marriage, her relationship with Laurie, her husband. She's learning, you know, how to navigate and steer that ship. So, you know, I think that's kind of it can stand alone. In context, it's good. It's got a lot of imagery and everything. So the short version,
like,
or the longer
better
version.
Shorter.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it leaves it more open to interpretation, and certainly connects with the modern world in, you know, any troubling situation. Storms, you know. So that one, I think, is probably one of the top ones. The very short, "I'm not afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship." That's just a great quote. I mean,
yeah, it is
hard
to
beat.
And it does kind of summarize a lot of the book.
Yeah. I like the faith one, and I like the birds descriptive one. Those three so far are my favorites. And then Amy says to Lori, love Joe all your days if you choose, but don't let it spoil you, for it's wicked to throw away so many good gifts because you can't have the one you want. This is before Amy and Lori are married, obviously. This is earlier on in the story. And I love that, for it's wicked to throw away so many good gifts because you can't have the one you want. I think that's food for thought, you know, that, you know, if people have a talent or, you know, they're good at something, you know, most people want to do what they're good at, but there are people in the world who don't do those things because they're, you know, trying to reach something that's not really within their powers of talents or something. So I don't know, I thought that was interesting.
You know? Yeah, and I think that could add a lot to our discussion of, is love all-consuming,
right,
or not?
Right, yeah.
You believe in life after love?
Yes, definitely. And yeah, I think that's a good one. And the longer part of that quote, the first part is, you needn't shrug your shoulders and think, much she knows about such things, i.e. love. I don't pretend to be wise, but I am observing, and I see a great deal more than you'd imagine. I'm interested in other people's experiences and inconsistencies, and though I can't explain, I remember and use them for my own benefit. Love, Joe, all your days, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so she's basically telling Lori, I watch, I observe, and I learn those lessons, and it helps me be a better person. I think the longer quote makes it more powerful, but it doesn't, you know, it's a longer quote, so it depends on if we want to go with longer or not. You know.
This one I could go either way. I do think that it does add something to have it be longer. I think that the shorter one does stand okay by itself.
Yeah, I think what I like about the longer one is that it gives us insight into her method of self-awareness and growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that when people think of Amy in Little Women, they don't think of that. They think of the selfish little girl, you know,
right,
who burns the manuscript. Spoiler alert, you know, as a child, you know, and, you know, I think that this is actually, you know, a really powerful character defining quote, and I love that Louisa May Alcott put that in there, that she has her youngest sister, you know, be the one. This isn't Joe talking, this is Amy. She's allowing Amy to have this really powerful, I watch, I observe, and I learn those lessons and make myself a better person through other people's experiences. I think that's amazing. I really do. I really like that quote. So, yeah.
I get this feeling that this year is going to be about defending the characters that are perceived as being brats.
Oh, I might be doing that. Yeah, that might be my theme. I don't know. You know, but it you know, we're talking about books, not the movies. You know, and
right,
there's always more to character development in books. And so I feel like I think a lot of the quotes from Jane Eyre, you know, are evocative of her character. You know, I think we're dealing with strong characters here, whether they're female or male. You know, may be up for grabs in certain quotes, but I like this. So then let's see. I think in earlier chapters, Joe is kind of interesting. One of the quotes that I have for Joe, I did the quotes by character. I did, you know, Beth, Amy, Joe, Marmy. I can't even remember if I had some from Meg or not. But from Joe, I have, I don't like to doze by the fire. I like adventures, and I'm going to find some. That just sounds so like, you know, impetuous and teenagery, and I don't know, it just sounded so...
Yeah, she's like the anti-hobbit.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and that's chapter 6. She's still young, you know, she's still a teenager, so, and then even in chapter 4, an earlier chapter, she says, I like good, strong words that mean something. Now, what does that mean? I don't know, but, you know, what words is she talking about, you know, but I thought that was pretty good. Also in chapter 4, she says something that I think is a little more readily accessible to today's world, especially in terms of speaking of, you know, feminism and gender equality. She says, I find it poor logic to say that because women are good, women should vote. Men do not vote because they are good. They vote because they are male, and women should vote not because we are angels and men are animals, but because we are human beings and citizens of this country. Feminist anthem, Little Women, right there. You know, I mean, yep, chapter four. Yep. I really like that one. So,
Yeah, that's an excellent quote.
I think. Go ahead.
I think that of those quotes, the fire adventurers one, I think that the boat sailing the boat one is a little bit stronger.
I do too.
And I like good strong words that mean something. I'm not sure where to take that if I'm anything but an author.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think that's limited, very limited. Yeah. Okay. So, Marmee, you know, it's funny. I was trying to find, you know, wonderful quotes by Marmee because she's the mother and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I struggled with that. You know, she's so pithy. She's so, I mean, she just, you know, she's kind of not as much of a main character in the book as I remember her being, you know. But she does say in the one scene after the ice skating and the manuscript stuff, she says, "I'm angry nearly every day of my life, Joe, but I've learned not to show it, and I still hope not to feel it." And I like that quote. I think it's a good quote. I don't know that it's appropriate for our project, but I liked it, so I put it in the list, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that could be interesting too on, you know, is that a growth and development quote, or is it telling us more about women's roles and how we aren't supposed to express anger?
Exactly. Not only are we not supposed to express it, she's determined to not feel it.
Right.
You know, so that one kind of got me. I already
let's,
did.
Let's at least hold on to that one for workshop.
Yeah.
Because that has strength.
I think my overall favorites are the longer quote, with the birds, with the bird motif and descriptions, and then the faith one. And did I do the quarantine one? I can't remember. I have to look something up real quick. I might have missed one. Oh yeah, I did. How dark the days and all that. Yeah, living. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think my favorites of what you've read are the description of each of the girls as a bird.
Yeah.
It's different from anything that we have done before.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of people do relate to, you know, identifying themselves with birds.
Right.
And or animals.
Visually and artistically, I think that gives a lot to work with, too. Because she describes at least four birds. You know, you got four birds right there. So.
Right. Yeah, and I do agree with, like, the attention to nature right now.
Yeah.
Is something that is especially prevalent. Yeah. And my other favorite is the boat, learning how to...
Yeah, those are my two favorites, too.
Yeah.
The faith one is third favorite, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Between the birds and the storm ship quote, I'm really torn. I would be happy with any three of those. So let's table those three for the moment.
Okay. And are you marking that those are our three favorite?
Yes, I think so.
Awesome.
I hate to the one that was like the mother's going off to nurse the father and the girls are left at home. That did sort of make me feel about, you know, both the people on the front lines, the nursing, healthcare workers, and the ones, you know, isolating at home, trying to keep from spreading the virus. So that one did speak to me on that, but, you know, I feel like this whole book speaks to that. So we could always bring all that up in workshop stuff.
Right.
Right now, I think our top quotes from Little Women are the one with the birds, the storms, I'm learning to sail my ship, and maybe the faith one. The description,
yes, I would agree.
When Beth is thinking her about her faith, or you know, this description of her faith, it's really written in third person, so it's Louisa May Alcott, the author, writing about Beth's faith, and I think it's a powerful description of faith in times of trouble. So that's why I like it. That's what I was trying to say.
Gotcha. Ooh. Yeah, I'd be fine with any of those.
Okay. Cool.
Great.
We'll come back to those then, right? You're taking notes. I know you are. You always do. Because I just realized I haven't really been marking the ones we like, so.
In the Little Women section, I only left highlighted the ones we talked about. The Faith one I don't think was in there.
Yeah, it's not in there. I was reading it straight out of my book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. My well-worn and beloved copy.
Aww.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's coming apart at the seams, but I love it so much. So yeah.
Have you hugged a good book today?
I have. I've loved at least four. Yeah. This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.